This is a podcast about adapting, overcoming, and thriving in life and business. I'm your host, Kirsty O'Brien, mum of four and meditation and mindfulness practitioner. And this is exactly where you're meant to be if you're ready to ditch the guilt and self-doubt and start showing up as the woman you were meant to be. This is the Mindful AF in Life and Business podcast. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Mindful AF in Life and Business. Today, I am so excited to be chatting with Dr. Orlina Kerrick, who is a family health advocate and helps professional mums lead a healthy and long life, feel fabulous, and teach their kids healthy habits. Hello, Orlina. How are you?
I am fabulous. Thank you so much for asking and thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for joining me. So Orlina is in Spain, so we've made our time differences work quite well. And I was really excited because I've been reading a couple of your posts and every single one has resonated with me. And I particularly loved you were brought up one about, you know, how we tend to as mums stay up late just to get that me time in. I thought, yes, I've been guilty of that. And so you've really got this, you've got your four pillars that you teach people, which is nutrition, exercise, sleep, and mindset. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're really all about helping people with habits that are positive and good for them.
Absolutely. I'm all about routines, habits, and systems. Well, I would take a backtrack and say I'm all about easy and fun. And how do you make things easy and fun? And the answer is routines, habits, and systems. So many people say, I want to do it all without thinking. And the without thinking bit is habits.
I like that spin on it because I feel like sometimes people feel like habits and routines aren't fun. And that's why they sort of shy away from them. It takes the fun out of life. But I love that you actually say it adds that fun element to it and makes it easy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going back to that post that I had about people staying up late, and I think the reality is it's not just mums, it's everyone. But the reason that mums do it is because they often feel that they've got so much going on in the daytime that they don't have time to do anything else. And that's their sort of me time. And I would say, you know, really and truly, what you want to be looking at is creating a routine, a system that works for you, but it includes some me time for you rather than just hanging it on the end and having it as an afterthought. And I hear people say things like, oh, well, you know, I don't think I do very well with routines because I'm so creative and I want to have time for my creativity. And I say, well, the answer is routines, habits, and systems, because then you can make sure that you include whatever it is you want to do. It doesn't matter what you want it to be, whether it's me time or creativity or exercising. But actually, once you have got your habits, it just happens automatically. I think of it like this. So, you know, all of those sort of things that you've got going on in your brain, what I call your daily stressors. So it might be, what am I going to cook for dinner? Or how do I lose weight? Or, you know, how do I make my business work? Or what do I have to do with social media? All of those things that are going on in your brain. If you could take all of those things and a magic fairy godmother could come down and wave her wand and go, I've taken all of that away. We've sorted it all out. Now, what are you going to do with all that time and energy that you've just created in your day? You've got, you know, you're there then in a position to say, okay, I can do all of these things that I want to do. And you have got that fairy godmother. It's called your habit brain. It's just that we don't really notice our habit brain. But there you go. Your habit brain will take care of all of those things. You just have to set it up in a way. So, you know, there's a little transition, I say, from where you are now to where you want to get to be, which is the rickety bridge. The problem with the rickety bridge is that habits, once they're properly formed habits, once you do them without thinking, they're the things that you fall back onto. So they're the things that happen when, you know, coronavirus hits and we all go into quarantine and life is life. What you're actually doing is your habits. The problem is when you decide you want to change your habits and life happens, you go back to your old habits because those are the ones that are still the habits. You haven't actually created those habits. They're not instilled enough. But once you get beyond that rickety bridge and they are there, that's where you know, life is just easy and everything happens without you having to think about it, and you've created new habits.
So tell me, how did you get to here where you are, this huge believer in these systems and routines? And, you know, what was the story that led you to be here helping busy mums and, you know, feeling fabulous and creating these habits?
Yeah, it's a long story, but I will tell you the brief version. So, you know, I trained in the UK, and working in the NHS, the healthcare system we have, is busy and stressful. And I always wanted to travel. So I did, you know, I worked in Australia for a bit. And, you know, part of going into medicine for me was that I could travel and still work. The irony being that I did do the traveling bit, but now I'm in Spain and I'm not actually working as a clinical doctor. So we decided essentially to move to Spain. And I kind of thought that I would be able to work here doing what I was doing. And that's a very long story. But essentially, I wasn't able to do exactly what I was doing before. It would mean retraining. It would mean commuting a long distance. And so I turned to the internet and decided that I was going to do something. This was, you know, nearly 10 years ago now. At that time, I had four really young kids. So I had four children under 4.5. And my children were picky eaters, which, you know, as a pediatric doctor, I used to see so many people who'd come in with their children who had constipation. And I would say, you know what? Your child needs to eat more vegetables. And it wasn't until I was a mother that I really realized that it's one thing to say, oh, eat more vegetables. And it's another thing for your child to actually, you can present them with so many vegetables, but they're going to eat the pasta. And yeah, exactly. Carb junkies, is that, that's what children are. And I realized that it wasn't as easy. So, and I could see myself going through this issue, and that lots of other people had it as well. So I started writing about picky eating and healthy eating for kids. And eventually I sort of pivoted and realized that really and truly the best thing that we can do for our kids is to demonstrate healthy eating and living. And that's the best way forwards. And so putting it all together, I work with the mother to teach her, because a lot of the mothers weren't really eating healthily. And it's impossible to teach your child to eat healthily if you're not eating healthily yourself. And that a lot of people had problems with either weight loss or just with healthy living. And, you know, as a mother of four myself, I'm constantly thinking about how to do these things. And, you know, really and truly, as I say, it all comes down to habits and routines and systems and, you know, a little bit of, this is just how life is. Do you know what I mean? Like a little bit of reality, a reality yeah. check.
So what are your favorite routines, habits and systems that you would recommend that busy mums can be implementing to help them to feel fabulous and lead this healthy, loving, wonderful life filled with energy, and so they've got time for their business, time for everything that they're trying to put on their plates?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question, and I think it's different for everybody. So, you know, I can talk to you about nutrition. We can talk about, you know, what is healthy eating in a nutshell, lots of vegetables and less refined, what I call refined, you know, white carbohydrates, junk food. We know that. And it's about going to those four pillars and looking at those four pillars and thinking how you can apply them to your life. The reality about habits is your body does, your brain doesn't care whether it's a good habit or a bad habit. Your brain will just carry on doing those habits. And so the first step really is to get a little bit of self-awareness about what you're doing. This sort of like, oh, wow, I see how that happens. So for example, with me, I've recently changed how I drink coffee. My husband decided he wanted to reduce the amount of coffee he drinks. So I would normally have coffee mid-morning, and now I have it when I come in from dropping the kids off at school. And I have my coffee about an hour after breakfast, so I don't need a snack. My brain goes like this, coffee snack. I'm like, no, you don't need a snack right now. But my brain says, coffee snack. We have snack right now. You've had coffee. You have to have snack. And so it's really interesting that self-awareness, until you build that self-awareness, you can't be in a position to build more habits. Another thing I'd say about that as well is if you're working by yourself, now, obviously, I recommend everyone needs a fabulous, you know, health coach or family advocate. You can change habits, more than one habit. But if you're doing things by yourself, you want to think about making one small change. And you might think, oh, it's just nothing, but you can really just create one small change. It could be going out for a walk. I'm going to walk for 20 or 30 minutes three times a week. Well, you can do 2 kilometers or so in half an hour. That's 6 kilometers a day, sorry, a week. It adds up. After a year, you've done loads of kilometers. So create that habit. And then when that's established as a habit, build on another habit. And so just create one. Actually, what I'm working on at the moment is what I call the Healthy You, Healthy Family Habit Challenge. And it's exactly this idea. How do I get the tools to create one habit and walk away with just going, okay, this is the habit I'm going to stick to, and I'm going to actually implement this. Because what happens is so many people go, okay, I'm going to try and change absolutely everything. They make their own sort of idea. Some people do it, but the vast majority of people, then life hits and then they just go, oh, overwhelmed, I can't do this. And what happens is you're not across that rickety bridge. You end up going back to the habits that you already have. And then you feel deflated. You feel worthless. You feel like, I can't do this. This thought in your brain is, you know, yeah, if I'm so clever, why can't I do this? And the answer is because of the two brains that you have. They don't always agree with each other. So, you know, it's not about willpower. It's about setting yourself up and looking at the environment and all of these different things and thinking, okay, I'm like a clockwork doll or toy. I'm going to wind myself up. I like to think of it as a train track. You know, one of those trains that goes round and round and round. I'm going to build the track, and then my habit brain is going round and round and round, and that's all it does.
Yeah, because we tend to, I think, because, you know, our brain likes to keep us comfortable, hasn't really evolved too much, the old caveman brain. And then, you know, I feel like when sometimes we try to set new habits, we almost set ourselves up for failure by, like you said, going too hard or taking too much on, and then we self-sabotage. We then, like you said, exactly, we beat ourselves up, we feel overwhelmed. So what's your like tip that, okay, I want to make one change, just say in the area of sleep, because I think that's a big one. A lot of busy mums or just busy entrepreneurs tend to have really shitty sleep habits, or, you know, not getting enough sleep. And I want to make one positive habit around my sleep. How do I get past that rickety bridge? How do I go from taking a negative habit that I might have and instead replacing that with a more positive, affirming habit of around my sleep, say?
Good question. So I have Dr. Alina's, I like systems for my sister. Dr. Alina's 3-step system. So, you know, the first step is self-awareness, like we talked about. You have to understand what a habit is and how your habit is triggered. So for example, you know, the coffee snack cue. If you don't understand that, if you try and give up your snack, you're going to be sabotaged every time you pour coffee, because until you understand coffee equals snack, you'll find yourself just eating snack and going, I didn't want to eat this snack. What's happened? So that first step is self-awareness. The second step is to think about your goal. And your goal isn't necessarily going to be what you do tomorrow, what you're going to do. You know, it's my long-term goal. So in the case of sleep, what I would recommend everybody does is get your 8-hour sleep, because it's so important for so many things, not least of all productivity, which, you know, if you're a busy entrepreneur, then you're much better off getting 8 hours sleep and waking up and doing all of those things productively, rather than, you know, burning the midnight oil and going really slowly. There's lots of studies that show we work much better when we're well rested and when we look after ourselves. And, you know, if you're a mother, I don't know about you, but I'm like an angry bear if I don't have enough sleep. You can't meet your kids' needs if you're running on low energy. So you need to make sure you've got your 8-hour sleep. There are also health benefits to sleep and weight loss benefits to sleep. So we're going to go for 8 hours. And actually, what you want to be doing is having the same routine every single day, because your body gets used to it. So bedtime, 10:30, that's what I do. And I get up, you know, it takes me half an hour to get to sleep. I'm going to have 8 hours. So that means I'm going to get up at 7 o'clock. Every single day you do the same. Now, if you're thinking about a sleep routine, you want to be thinking about what you do in the nighttime, you know, do you read a book? Do you do a bit of meditation? Some people might have a shower. What's your little bit before that? And what's your bit immediately after that? Do you jump out of bed and have coffee? Do you jump out of bed and do a 7-minute workout? So think about your long-term goal of what that's going to be. And if you're thinking about, for example, exercise, your long-term goal might be, so I recently started running. I'm a swimmer normally, but it's winter here now. And so now I'm doing running. So my long-term goal back in the summer was, okay, I would like to be able to run, you know, 5-10 kilometers by myself and just think I can do this. Obviously, I didn't start the first day going, okay, let's do 5 kilometers. I started, you know, with a couch to 5K thing, which is you're going to walk for half an hour and you're going to run for a minute. That's perfectly fine. That's obviously not my goal, but you get clear on what your goal is going to be. And then step three is what I call your roadmap. So what is it that you're going to do every single day? What's that thing that you're going to repeat, repeat, repeat? The bottom line of habits is it's repeat, repeat, repeat. Now, there are a few more things that you want to understand about habits because, you know, if you don't enjoy habits, how do you put yourself in that situation where it's easy for you to repeat it? So thinking about your sleep, you want to have a think about, okay, this is what I want to do. I've set up my routine. I'm going to have a bath before I go to bed because that's a nice little bit of me time. Having a bath can actually help you relax, cool down a little bit. Strangely, your body needs to get cooler and it feels like you're getting hotter, but you let go of all the heat afterwards, if that makes sense. So, you know, you've got this and then you think, this is what I want to do. Now, I have to aim to make the good habits easy and the bad habits difficult. And think about what obstacles are going to come up. So think about, how do I make this bath easy? Or how do I make this bedtime easy? Now, it's different for everybody. A few examples might be for me, you know, when I want to get up and go running, if I get all my clothes ready the night before, I get my playlist ready the night before, it's all set up to go. As opposed to, you know, if I have to rummage around in the dark, trying not to wake up my husband whilst I stumble around and think, oh my goodness, where am I going to go? All of these decisions, the less decisions you have to make, the easier it's going to be for you. So decide ahead of time and think, okay, this is what I'm going to do. An example of making something difficult, you know, if I want to give up the habit of watching television in the evening time, hide the remote control, get somebody else to hide the remote control. Put the television in a cupboard so that when you sit down, you really have to think, okay, I now have to get the television out. Or perhaps you want to give up eating a biscuit after dinner. Well, stop buying biscuits. Make sure your house is biscuit free and chocolate free. And suddenly you think, okay, I really want a biscuit, but now I have to go to the shop and go and buy one. I'm just going to have a cup of infusion instead because you've made that habit more difficult. And those are all things that you have to think about because what's easy for you and what's difficult for you is different from what's difficult for somebody else. The other thing to know about habits is in between that period of that rickety bridge is that habits have rewards. So why do we first start a habit? It's because there's some kind of reward. For example, I am hungry and I walk past the bakery and I look at those donuts and I think, oh, I'm going to try a donut. And I eat a donut and, you know, not only do I get glucose, but I get dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter in our brain. It's very short-lived. So it only gives us a really short reward. But, you know, we think, oh, I like that donut. The next time we walk past that bakery, we remember that reward and we think, I can repeat that. I can get that reward again. How am I going to get that reward? I'm going to go and buy another donut. And that's how we build habits. The issue with habits is that once they are entrenched, that reward doesn't matter. You don't need that reward anymore, which is why we do things when we just think, why am I even doing this? They've done experiments with poor little rats, but you know, what they do is they give them a reward, which could be sugar or whatever, and they have to go and press a lever to get it. And then when they've taken away the reward, if the habit is entrenched, the poor little rats are just going press, 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 press. There's no reward, but I'm still doing this habit of pressing the thing because that's my habit. When the habit isn't fully entrenched, they do it for a little bit and go, there's no reward. Why am I doing this? So, you know, it's about thinking about what kind of rewards can help you get across that rickety bridge. And those rewards, ideally, they want to be internal rewards. So something that motivates you, something that is important to you. If your doctor tells you, you need to exercise to lower your blood pressure, if you don't care about your blood pressure and you don't care what your doctor thinks, that's not going to motivate you to exercise. But if you think, oh, I would like to lose weight and I would like to be able to wear my bikini in the summer and go and sit on the beach, and it's January now, so if I actually do this, I have a chance of, you know, getting a bit of tone, losing a little bit of weight, I'm going to do that. If that's something that's important to you, you can use that reward as, okay, I've ticked off one day, one tiny step. It doesn't have to be a concrete thing, if that makes sense. So I have a 7-minute workout that I do in the morning, and my reward is the lady saying in American, congratulations, workout complete. It's not a big thing, but it signals to me, oh, you finished this. And I get this feeling of, like, I've done my 7-minute workout, hooray.
So it's almost like attaching the reward to the effort. And that creates the dopamine.
Yes, exactly. I think what you want to be doing is thinking about what your long-term goal is. And then when you're clear in your mind that this is the route to your long-term goal, that's when you can see the reward coming. So for example, one of the things that motivates me is the idea of leading a long and healthy life and being active and mobile into later age. And I can see that, you know, my four pillars are the way that we do this. If you read anything, you know, there's some controversies, but essentially it's about eating healthily, exercising, sleeping well, and emotions and mindset. And those are my four pillars. And those are why I've chosen those four pillars. And so every time I work on those pillars, every time I think, okay, I'm doing some exercise. Well, I actually really enjoy exercising now. When I first started running, I didn't enjoy it. It was a bit like, you have to get over this to get to that goal. But how do I get to that goal? Well, I just have to keep repeating it. And there's that sense of achievement of, oh, I've done it. And this is getting me closer to that goal. If you're not clear on how you actually get there, and I think this is a problem that some people face, then it's easy to give up. So, you know, you might say, okay, I'm going to try this diet to lose weight. And you're not 100% convinced. You think you'll give it a go and see what happens. Well, if you're not 100% convinced and you give it a go, you haven't gone far enough along. Or, I mean, it might be incorrect. It depends what you're doing. But then it's easy to give up and go, well, this isn't working. But if you know that science is backing you up and you think about it and think, this is the way forwards, I just need to keep going. I need to keep going, because we can't see that reward immediately. And, you know, typically what happens with people is they start something new, they get immediate reward of seeing a change, and they think, yeah, this is fabulous. And then the change slows down, because that's the nature of things, but you need to keep going. But they don't see so much changing, and then they think, well, this isn't working. Well, yes, it is working, but you just need to carry on. But if your brain is saying it's not working, that's the other thing about our thinking brain. Our thinking brain is so good at creating excuses. It likes to convince us of things. Why didn't you do this? Well, because today was different. And well, I just need to treat myself. It is good at making excuses, particularly when that habit isn't established.
I like that. And so what has to come forth, what can override that thinking brain, that holding on to the long-term goal?
Well, the habit brain, essentially. You want to get to that stage where habit brain is just where, you know, where you're doing things. What I recommend people do is what I call a habit audit. And I recommend doing this, you know, once a year. So you sort of are aware of all the habits. And it's amazing what we do out of habit without thinking about it. So including all of those four pillars, including how we think about things, that is just habit. And our emotions, also habit. It may feel like they're not habit, but they are essentially habit. So, you know, for example, what happens when your children start complaining about something? You fall into a habit of what you say and the tone of voice that you say, which leads your children to do something else, and then you answer back. And that is just another habit, another way of being. And once you can become aware of that, then you can change that. And so the idea behind the habit audit is you become aware of these things, and then you make your plan to change them. I like this habit, it's going to stick, we'll stay with that one. This one I can see is no longer serving me, and I'm going to change that habit.
I think that's so important. I love the idea of that, a habit audit, because you brought up such an important point. I tell this to my clients quite often. You have a habit of not believing in yourself, so you can therefore establish a new positive habit of believing in yourself. But I think we rarely think about our thoughts even as in terms of habitual thinking as well. So I think that's such an important point that you just raised about looking at all of those areas and actually doing a habit audit and like, what habits do I want to keep?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when you come to entrepreneurship, a lot of it is habit as well. So, you know, what are your habits regarding social media or outreach or whatever it is? We kind of think, okay, I need to do everything with my thinking brain. And obviously that is important, but a lot of it is, okay, I'm going to get into the habit of planning my Instagram posts or planning my Facebook posts, and then it's done and dusted. But it can be difficult building up that habit.
Yes, I can feel you on that one. You brought up before about cues and how, you know, when we have perhaps a habit that we're trying to break, and you're saying how, you know, you when you think about having a coffee, straight away you get that snack cue. What creates those cues for us? Because I think that's the biggest blocker, isn't it? That you sort of, when you're trying to change a habit, you do have that strong cue that sort of keeps you attached to the habit.
Well, I think that's how our brain works. And it's really interesting. So, you know, you think about this thinking part of your brain, your prefrontal cortex, that's where it's kind of what we consider ourselves. Our personality is there. That's where we do all this planning. And that part of our brain is, it takes a lot of energy to run that brain. It's like driving your car in, you know, first or second gear the whole time. So it does the decisions. We get something called decision fatigue as well. So, you know, the longer you go through the day and have to make decisions, the more difficult it becomes. And then the other part of our brain, our habit brain, is so much more efficient. It just, you know, the reason we have this is because it's sort of offloading from this thinking part of brain. We just do this without having to think about it. So the way that habit brain works is you see something, you do something automatically. And that's just like the creation of the brain. That's just that program that it has. So it goes cue, action, reward. That's, you know, how we just learn that thing. So yeah, I mean, I think understanding that then becomes really interesting, because we can then adapt our environment and adapt that habit brain once we understand it and just create everything around it so that we know what we're going to decide and what we're going to do ahead of time. So we have decided, it's just, we've just sort of like written a computer program and said, computer program, this is what we're doing for the next 6 months. We're doing, you know, getting up at 7 o'clock and going for a 5 kilometer walk or run.
So how long, I mean, I hear lots of different, some people say it takes 21 days to create a habit. Other people say it takes 3 months, 6 months. I think that is probably one of the most controversial talked about points when we talk about new habit formation. In your experience supporting people to create new habits and systems, how long should we like expect it to take when, you know, it just becomes ingrained in us?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question. And if you look at, I've Googled this recently, and they say anything between 18 and 254 days. And you think, that's quite a big time difference. Yes. They do say the average is around 66 days. But I think one of the things about a habit is you kind of think, how long does it take to form this habit? And you're there going, I'm trying to create this habit. And you know, to begin with, you do have to use a certain amount of consciousness to be able to repeat. And then you think, after a week, oh, I've been doing this for a week now, when's it going to become a habit? And the next week you think, I've been doing it for 2 weeks, when's this gonna become a habit? And then suddenly you think a year later has passed and you think, oh, I did create that habit. So the habit kind of forms when you're not looking, because the whole point of the habit is you do it without thinking. And then it is only when you sort of look back and go, oh yeah, I did totally create that habit.
I know. That's why I think it's there's such a disparity in how long people feel that it takes, because I also feel like we don't give ourselves recognition enough for when the habit actually takes hold. Like you said,
yes, exactly.
We're so hard on ourselves that we've probably been actually doing that habit for a couple of months, and then we actually look back and go, oh yeah, that's a thing now, that's, I just do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've touched a little bit on the brain and the dopamine response with habits, and how we have that quick dopamine response when we give ourselves that instant reward, and how that sort of does that. How powerful is dopamine in terms of, because I know, look, a lot of people talk about negative social media habits and trying to create better social media habits, because it can be hard. A lot of us, if we're for business, use it for business, but then get totally distracted by it as well. And sorry, yeah. And I've heard that there's like the whole way social media works is to get that dopamine dump going so that you keep going back for it. What's the biggest challenge, do you think, when we're trying to have a healthy habit around social media use, you know, and we get that dopamine?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting topic of conversation, and it's not just about social media as well. So if we look at dopamine, one of the issues with dopamine is, well, if we go back, dopamine is really useful. We need dopamine. So if we, for example, look back at our ancestors when they were hunter-gatherers, what drove them to go and find food? Well, dopamine did. They'd go and find a blackberry or a fig, whatever it was, and dopamine hit. Hooray, I've done this. Without that dopamine, you're just going to sit around going, hunger? What's hunger? I'm fine. I don't need to eat. So it drives us to do things. But the reality now is that, you know, we get that dopamine from so many places, you know, watching television. Can you imagine people, you know, the biggest, scariest thing was, I don't know, being chased by a tiger or something. And it didn't happen very often. Whereas now we can plug ourselves into television, we can social media, all of these things give us a dopamine surge. And the issue is we get to this stage where we always want different things. We always are excited by new and more, and our dopamine receptors want more and more. So they're not happy with just like, oh yeah, I got a blackberry. Now I want more blackberries. And, you know, now I can get a packet of crisps or a nice sticky donut. Now I want more and more. And that's the danger, is that we become desensitized to dopamine. So actually, on one level, the whole coronavirus, having to stay at home and do very little for an entire year, isn't bad idea in resetting our dopamine receptors, because you can reset them. The danger, as you say, is social media, because we are all attached to social media, and it is very easy to be constantly looking for that one interesting thing. I mean, I think the reality about social media is it's easy to just go, okay, I'm going to check. And you may check it. I think the average person checks their social media. I need to check the statistics, but it's so many times a day, so much time for like one small reward. Oh, this one thing was interesting. So I actually get that dopamine reward once, or, you know, a reasonable dopamine reward once out of, say, 50 times. And I think this comes back to that three-part step, the three-step. So, you know, being self-aware of what you're doing and then going, okay, I do need to change this. And what is my goal? What goals do I want? Now, some people, and I've got lots of friends, go, do you know what? I'm just turning off social media. I don't need it in my life. I have my job where I'm doing whatever it is I'm doing. I don't need all of this social media. That's fine. I'm just going to delete it and not have it. The reality is, if you're an entrepreneur and you're an online entrepreneur, you need to use social media, particularly now, to be meeting new clients and new people. But I think you can have boundaries around it. So you can say, okay, you know, for me, I like to have my afternoons, not my fresh creative time. So I'm going to allow myself to have half an hour in the afternoon where I might post something, I might answer other people's questions. And you really have those boundaries, which are set into your routines, your habits, and your system. So that's your long-term goal. And then you want to apply that. Okay, what's the blueprint? What am I doing on a daily basis? And how do I prevent myself from this habit that I have now created, which is looking at my mobile phone every 3 minutes? And the same thing applies. How do you make it, how do you make a good habit easy and how do you make a bad habit difficult? Well, you know, leave your mobile phone alone. People often phone me and say, you didn't answer your phone. And I'm like, that's because it's in a different room. I don't have it attached to me the whole time, particularly when I'm working. We don't need our mobile phones the whole time. Do you remember, 20 years ago or so, we didn't even have mobile phones and we all survived.
We actually went places without a phone, without being contactable. I know, it's just horrifying, isn't it?
I know, we used to make arrangements, which would be, I will see you at 3 o'clock on the corner of blah, blah, blah. And if somebody didn't, if they were late, we just had to stand there and wait. Well, the reality is kind of the same now, except that, you know, we've been sent a text or a phone call saying, I'm running late. So we did do these things. And I think it's just comes down to, okay, make it difficult. Delete those mobile phone apps that, you know, those ones, put barriers in between. Delete them. Don't take your phone with you every time you go out. We don't, you know, if you're just going on a short journey, if you're just going on a walk, you don't need your mobile phone unless you want to take a photograph. Okay. And think of different, again, think of those cues. So when you're thinking about, when do I pick up my phone? It'll be in those moments when you think, oh, I've got 2 minutes to do nothing. We've sort of lost the habit of being able to do nothing. We might look at our watch or, you know, think, I want to pick, know what the time is. So you pick up your phone and suddenly you're on Facebook and think, okay, so, well, what can I do that's differently in that moment when I think, oh, I've got, you know, 2 or 3 minutes to do nothing. Create a positive habit. I'm just going to sit still and breathe and, you know, do a short meditation, a little getting back to myself. Or instead of looking at the time, I'm going to put on a wristwatch, not a smartphone, a wristwatch. Yeah. And just, you know, it's about that self-awareness and knowing yourself and making good habits good and bad habits difficult.
I really like that advice about making it difficult, because I think that is probably the step missed a lot. We don't make that bad habit difficult to fall back into. We don't sort of follow through on that part of it, and then it's just so easy, just because that habit's already ingrained in us, so it's so easy to step into it. But then by making it difficult somehow, you know, and I did this when we moved house a few years ago. I moved the TV out, like I don't have a TV in our bedroom anymore, because I was just dealing with a bit of insomnia and I was watching TV, you know, to fall asleep, and I just knew that it was a bad habit. So I was like, that's it, if it's not in the room, I won't go out to the lounge room and watch it. And within 2 days, I didn't even miss it. I wasn't so consciously aware that I'd made that habit difficult until just now talking to you.
But also you've created a habit really, really quickly. So you can create habits quickly, particularly when you do them in a way. So one of the things that you've just brought up there, which is really interesting, is displacement as well. So when we change our lives, when things change dramatically, we change our habits. So if you look at the world in the last year, a lot of people have had disruption in their daily routine and created different habits. Now, the issue with those different habits, like all habits, they may be more healthy habits or they may be not healthy habits. It's just this random lottery of which habits they are. So it may be that you have created the habit of doing more exercise. And this has definitely happened for me, because we weren't allowed out for so long. And then there was a week where we were allowed to do some exercise. We weren't allowed in our cars. And I started cycling, and I started cycling to the beach so that I could go swimming. And I suddenly realized, oh my goodness, it's only a 10-minute cycle ride to the beach. Why have I always had this habit of going in the car? So that disruption sort of showed me that cycling around here is really easy. And there was no reason for me not to cycle. On other levels, I did also develop a 5 o'clock afternoon beer habit, not consistently, but I could see it happening. And that's clearly not such a great habit. But, you know, and I think a lot of people have been polarized by this. Either you go, okay, I'm going to be super healthy, or a lot of people have said, what do they call it? The Corona stone, where I've got into making treats and doing less exercise, and the less healthy habits have flourished as opposed to the good habits.
The drinking thing, I mean, I'm in Australia and apparently we're known as big drinkers. Anyway.
You're not big drinkers compared to the UK.
But I know that that was like, our alcohol sales soared, and I had spoke to so many friends that said, oh my gosh, I've been drinking every single day. Not a lot, but just two glasses. And it so quickly became a habit, I think, because all of the other routines that we maybe had just fell to the wayside, like working, school. So I think, I don't know, I guess as humans, we are very like habitual, aren't we? We want habits.
We do want habits. And I think as well, those what we call bad habits, they're really easy. Like I noticed over at Christmas time, we got some chocolates. We call them bonbons. Oh, they're so delicious. And I had a packet of chocolates with bonbons and we got into a habit of after dinner, we would have a Christmas chocolate. And it's really easy to get into that habit. And food particularly is created so that we crave that food. It's, you know, they get what they call the bliss point, full of fat and sugar and salt. And our body just goes, oh, that is absolutely delicious. I want another one and I want another one and I want another one. And it's not that you can't have any, but you just have to be aware that it's really easy to create that for that to become a habit. And it, you know, if you do it for a week or 2 weeks, it's no big deal. But if you do that consistently over a year, suddenly you've eaten kilos and kilos of chocolates that you weren't otherwise eating. And I think that's the danger. So, you know, we ate up all our Christmas chocolate. It's all gone now. We don't have chocolate.
Again, it's making it difficult, isn't it? Just don't have it in the house and then you have to walk very far to get it.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of think, oh, I'd like it, but not so much that I'm going to go and buy it.
And it's that little battle, isn't it, in the brain when you're first breaking a bad habit where it comes up because, oh, you could get that. And then it's just that having that internal willpower in that. Again, it's like you said, the self-awareness around, okay, what's my long-term goal? This is what I want to do. And sort of meeting yourself with that compassion and grace to know that you don't want to fall into those old habits and you want to stay focused on the new habits.
Yeah, one trick that I find very successful and very easy to do with my clients is to try something else. So when I teach healthy eating, we do a reboot. And, you know, that's a good way of sort of breaking things up. But on a smaller level, you can also say, so, for example, I have a client who she did very well and, you know, put all these habits in these four pillars. One of the issues she faced was she used to eat chocolate on the way back from work. And she decided, well, she realized that this wasn't great for her weight loss goals because she wanted to lose weight. But she couldn't really work out how to stop that chocolate. And we went through a phase where we did the 2 week reboot. And so she had to give up chocolate for that 2 weeks. And that's kind of doable. And one of the things it does is if you give something up for a short period of time, it's not very long. Most people can do anything for 2 weeks. Particularly if you pick your 2 weeks to not have a wedding or a party or something in the middle of them. And so she gave up chocolate for 2 weeks and then she would go back to eating chocolate. And then particularly because chocolate was something that was, you know, her bugbear, if that is makes sense, she would do another week, 2 weeks. And as you do that 2 weeks, it gets easier and easier and just shows yourself, yeah, I can do it. And do you know what? Life without chocolate for 2 weeks, it's not so bad. And then she'd get to the stage where she'd go, okay, I'm going to do it for a month now. I'm going to give up chocolate for a month. Until eventually she got to the stage where she's like, do you know what? I don't actually need chocolate in my life anymore. It's not as great as I thought it was. I'm perfectly happy without it. And suddenly that hold just disappears and you just go, take it or leave it. It's not a big deal. And, you know, I found the same with cakes. My kids love beautiful cakes. My favorite one is an apple slice with, you know, a little bit of custard underneath. And it is delicious and I do like it. But sometimes you have that sort of, oh, okay, we'll have a treat, we'll have this. And then you eat it and you're a bit sort of disappointed. The anticipation of it was more exciting than the actual eating of it. And you get to the stage of like, oh, do you know what? I can't be bothered. And that sounds like, you know, I can hear people in the background, you know, listening going, oh my goodness, that would never happen to me. I just, food has a hold over me. I have cravings for this. I couldn't possibly see myself in that situation. But it's not true. It's just the way we think about things. It's physiology. There's lots of reasons why that happens. But it's because you're in this hamster wheel of how you think about things and you can't imagine thinking about things in a different way. But yet you can totally get to the place where food doesn't have a hold over you and you think whatever it is that you love now. Some people it's croissants, some people it's bread, some people it's pasta. You just think, yeah, do you know what? It's not such a big deal anymore.
Mm. So true. In your experience working with mainly working mums, I suppose, do you feel like people come to you with enough habits around self-care, or do you feel like self-care is just this idea that we hold up here that we know we should get like some me time and we should look after ourselves, but we don't really tend to form true habits around self-care?
Yeah, I think the latter. And I think as well, there can be a misconception of self-care. So I think most people, particularly mothers, they don't have enough self-care habits. But I think as well, some people sort of think, oh, well, self-care is having a bubble bath or allowing myself to eat some chocolate. You know, yes. That's so, you know, talking about my client, she would say, I'm going to eat chocolate on the way back from work because I need to treat myself. I've had a hard day and this is what I want to do. It's a reward. But I would say, no, you need to rethink self-care. And self-care is essentially thinking about all four of those pillars and making sure that you exercise and that you eat healthily because you want to nourish your body and to make sure that your body has all the things it needs and it's looked after properly in the same way that we get our cars checked up or we go to the dentist to brush our, to get our teeth cleaned, that we need to keep that maintenance up because otherwise our batteries become low and we can't do any of the things that we need to do, particularly for mothers who, you know, they've got a long list of everything they need to do and themselves are right at the bottom. And actually, once you start implementing self-care and making space for yourself and your own needs, your batteries become charged. You actually find yourself, once you've put in all these habits, you've got more time in the day because you're not wasting so much time thinking about all of these things. And you have more time to do the things you want to do, which may be, you know, connecting with your kids, parenting your children in a way that you want to parent and you've got energy to parent. It may be building your business and saying, okay, I've now got time and energy to be that creative person who's going to build up my business. Or in work, I want to thrive in work, whatever it is you want to do. It might be you want to become a painter or, I don't know, anything. But essentially, yeah, that self-care is the key, that first step, that first, okay, do you know what? I actually do need to look after myself that so many people miss out on.
Oh, I agree, because as you said, it's about that having self-care as habits in especially those four areas, as you said, means that we have the energy to do what we want to do. Otherwise, we're just depleted every day and then there's not enough time for the kids or enough time for our partner and the house is out of control and our business is just never moving forward because we're just constantly like running ourselves ragged and we're just depleted. And I always think that's just self-care sometimes because it's so overused, the term. Sometimes it makes me cringe because exactly I feel like people just think, oh, it's not a necessity. It's bubble baths and massages. But it's really, I say to my clients, it's caring for yourself deeply, mentally, emotionally, physically. And so I really love how you're saying, yes, look at those pillars in your life of nutrition, exercise, sleep, your mindset, and create good, positive self-care habits in those areas to support yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about all four of them. And I think another thing that for some reason, and I haven't quite figured this out, but we're always really harsh to ourselves. We're always mean to ourselves and we always set high expectations to ourselves. And then when we don't get that, we have this, you know, mean self-talk. You know, I want to give up chocolate. I didn't do it. Oh, I'm worthless. You've just failed again. Whereas we wouldn't talk to anybody else like that. I always say to people, you should talk to yourself, treat yourself as you would treat your best friend. Now, if your best friend was doing something reckless, you would say, do you know what? I think you need to change the way you're showing up, the way you're doing this. Can you see how this isn't a great thing? Now, whether your best friend pays any attention or not is another question. But most people, I think, wouldn't just go, particularly if they were asked, hey, do you think this thing is great? You wouldn't just go, oh yeah, it's fabulous. Carry on drinking yourself into a stupor every single night. You wouldn't say that, would you? You'd say, I think you need some help, really and truly. But we're not so compassionate to ourselves.
I know, we're terrible to ourselves, aren't we? We're just so mean sometimes. I think I was say, you know, journal out what you think, like some of your self-talk sometimes, and you read back over it and think, oh my goodness, I would not speak to anybody else like that. But yet we have that dialogue going on in our heads sometimes, and it's just so sad because that's where we're sabotaging ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting. And it's a total habit. Again, another habit that we're not aware of is how we talk to ourselves.
So true. Well, I have totally enjoyed chatting to you because I am actually a Virgo, so I am a big believer in habits. I'm quite ritualistic in everything I do from morning to night. So you are definitely speaking my language.
But on a side note, rituals are really interesting. I was reading about them yesterday, and rituals aren't quite the same as habits. So rituals don't have that reward in them. It's a behavior that you repeat. Now, I guess it could turn into a habit because you can just do it a bit without thinking. But there is science basically to say that you benefit from a ritual, not in terms of the outcome of the ritual, but, you know, like if you have a ritual which is, I'm going to go and bury something under a tree and then, you know, $10,000 will fall into my lap. It's not that the sort of magic behind them, but the ritual in the way that we think about things and do that ritual, it's actually a calming effect, and it helps us create those beliefs. So placebos being one of those great things that if you start taking medicines which are placebos, they do have an effect, and they think it's all to do with the belief and the beliefs that we create around them.
Oh, I really like that. Yeah, I have a few little rituals that I just do because they make me feel good. Like I have like a little house offering that we do every morning and put a little flower out. And again, exactly, you've nailed it, because it's exactly that just makes us feel good in the mornings. And it feels like we're like welcoming positive energy into our house.
Well, gratitude is another good habit to get into as well. So it might be that you've combined two of them. You know, if you're saying thank you for everything I've got, because that puts you in a positive space. It makes you see all the positive things in your life. And it's, you know, that spiral upwards. I always talk about a spiral upwards rather than a spiral downwards. And it's one of the things that can help us spiral upwards.
Oh, I like that. Yes. Well, I could definitely pick your brain all day long. I find the human brain fascinating, why we do the things that we do. And I would definitely recommend for anyone to sit down after they've listened to this and please do a habit audit and get into contact with Orlena, and she will support you to overhaul your habits, do a habit reboot. I love it. You've really got me thinking about these four pillars now. I'm sort of scanning. What can I change? So if people would like to connect with you, where can they find out more about you as well?
Well, thank you so much for asking. So my website is drorlena.com. So that's drorlena.com. I have my own podcast, which is Fit and Fabulous at 40. And yes, I'm going to be doing this exciting habit challenge, which is going to be happening in April, and we will be doing a habit audit together. So it'll be a week-long challenge, you know, talking about some of these things and thinking with the objective of you choose one habit. Now, you can't create a habit in 5 days, obviously. Well, I don't know, perhaps you can, you've did one and two, but you know, the idea isn't you've established the habit. The idea is you walk out of that challenge with the tools and the decision of which habit that you're going to create, and you're going to go on and create it. So that will involve doing a habit audit as well.
Oh, I love it. Well, I will pop all the links for that in the episode notes as well. I think that sounds so much fun. And your podcast is amazing. I've listened to quite a few episodes now.
Oh, thank you.
So I would definitely recommend anybody to head on over and listen. So many great things on, especially helping instill habits with the family and healthy eating. Yeah, I've listened to quite a few of your episodes.
Oh, thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I found it so interesting, and I've learned something new, which I always love to walk away from a conversation like this, learning something.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you loved this episode, I would be so grateful if you could take the time to leave me a 5-star review and share this with your friends and family.
I really appreciate you being here with me. And if you'd like to know more about what I do and for some free resources, please head on over to my website, teamko.com.au, and you can connect with me over on social media at Meditate with Kirstie.